Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Brains, we've all got them, in the biological sense anyway, but they remain a little bit of a mystery to most of us. That's something Brain Awareness Week aims to address. Administered in New Zealand by the Neurological Foundation for the past 5 years, it's part of a global campaign to build public awareness of brain research and how we can keep our own brains healthy. We're joined now by Dr. Kathy Stenier and Dr. Bronwyn Connor of the Centre for Brain Research at Auckland University's School of Medicine to talk about how this year's Brain Week went and what the state of brain research is. Oh, Kathy and Bronwyn, welcome. This isn't the first Brain Week. What's number six, is it? Or number
yeah,
five?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Well, was there a particular focus this year?
This week the focus was on brain health, so things that you can do to help look after your brain throughout your lifetime and then what to do perhaps if things start going wrong.
So what can you do? I presume there's nutrition, exercise, what else?
Those are the main things. And walking, just basic physical activity, is actually one of the best things you can do to keep your brain in good nick throughout your lifetime. But also avoiding a lot of other risky things like smoking or excess alcohol is really important as well.
Excess alcohol as well?
Yeah, definitely. So people who drink to excess, that eventually creates all kinds of damage in the brain, and that's irreversible.
What about the, there's been talk over the last few years and companies trying to cash in on the idea of the brain training of, you know, games you can play, crosswords, all of that. Yeah. I mean, is there any sort of medical support for that?
I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because there's a huge study just been done in Sweden that did exactly that. They looked at the effect of things like cryptic crosswords and Sudokus and all of those things. And what they found, in a nutshell, was that you got really good at doing cryptic crosswords and Sudokus. And in fact, in terms of your other general sort of memory performance or thinking performance, it actually didn't seem to offer you any protection at all. Contrast that with another big study that's just come out showing that walking for 40 minutes three times a week is actually what's going to protect your brain from the effects of aging, like memory problems and so on. So it's a hard idea to get your head around, but rather than practicing thinking, you need to be physically active to protect your brain.
So it's not even like you have to, say, double your heart rate or anything. You just have to walk.
No, that's the beauty of it. Most people can manage that. It's just a decent walk, roughly 40 minutes, three times a week. And that will do an awful lot of good, more good than any medicine we currently have, in fact.
And we actually know that the reason why walking is good is that that level of exercise is actually releasing chemicals in your brain that actually help protect and support brain cells. So there's quite a lot of evidence behind that. So while you're walking, you're not only exercising your heart, you know, increasing your fitness levels, think about your brain at the same time. You're actually releasing really protective chemicals that are actually helping support all those cells.
So that would obviously be really important in schools.
Yes.
Is there a campaign to get that, you know, that through? Because it seems like quite an important message. If you want kids to learn, they need to exercise.
Oh, I think, yeah, I think you've hit on a really interesting thing there. And probably isn't supported well enough in schools. You know, we all know kids are highly active anyway. Sitting in a classroom all day isn't probably going to be hugely conducive to learning. But also then getting them out and actually doing some exercise in the middle of the day. I know most schools have little exercise periods just before lunch, sort of mid-morning time. But I think, you know, there is something there that we could really reinforce into schools, that maybe they make, you know, another one in the afternoon, and this is actually part of learning.
How about nutrition? Is there actually such a thing as brain foods?
We're looking at each other thinking, oh, crumbs. I think there is some evidence that, you know, oily fish, for example, your salmons and so on, do seem to contain some, you know, lovely things that are good for your brain and nervous system in general. But in terms of, you know, superfoods, that kind of thing, I don't think there's a hang of a lot of evidence for that. But no. Bronwyn, that's more your
I mean, the omega-3 story is pretty exciting. I think, you know, we should all try and have good weekly intakes of omega-3. It can't do anything but some good, but the evidence isn't really strongly saying that, you know, yes, this is a superfood, if you want to call it that. And, you know, as Kathy said, there's obviously things that you want to avoid, such as excess alcohol, you know, high sugar levels. But in terms of, you know, the superfood that we should all be eating to make us smart and our brains super healthy, there isn't any one set food that we can put our finger on at the moment.
The impression I'm getting is essentially you're saying brain health is, you're doing the same things as you do for physical health. I mean, we get bombarded with messages about how to keep ourselves fit and healthy. You know, so many stories about how to protect your heart, for example. But you're saying it's essentially the same thing. Because I think a lot of, there is a public perception that in some ways the brain is completely removed physiologically from the rest of the body. You know, are you basically saying that the brain is just another organ that we need to exercise?
Well, to us, it's not just another organ.
No, of course.
It's sort of our favourite one. We think it's very special and magic.
But yes,
you're right.
Yeah, I think you are right. You know, we need to be thinking of the body as a whole. The brain isn't special in any respect in terms of actually, you know, well-being in terms of food and exercise. But I think you're right there that people have, even in terms of research, sort of looked away from some of the things, the basic things such as exercise and what that's actually doing for the brain. And now we are actually looking at it and discovering that that really is almost, you know, simply is quite a good thing to be doing.
You both, to some extent, deal with when things go wrong with the brain, don't you? I mean, Bronwyn, let's talk about stem cells, because there has been, we've discussed this before, an enormous amount of bogus information about stem cell therapy in the media. Is that situation improving?
No, it's not, unfortunately. And if anything, in the last 12 months, we've seen more clinics coming up and advertising supposed, you know, miracle cures through stem cell therapy in various places such as China, Mexico. And, you know, and they're hitting quite a few of our support organisations quite hard, trying to basically lure people in, for want of a better word. So the public do need to be cautious about what's being offered there. Stem cell therapy has huge promise, but at present we've only got 4 proper clinical trials in place, and that's only in the last 6 months.
And that's in New Zealand?
No, there's international clinical
internationally
trials.
Internationally, wow. Yeah. Because you hear so much about it, I thought there must be much more work going on.
Well, those are clinical trials that have been approved for the US Food and Drug Administration. So these are the proper, high-level, full phase 4 clinical trial process. The other things that you're hearing about are more like experimental interventions, and they tend to be looking at using bone marrow stem cells, which fall into an interesting category because bone marrow, of course, is used for rare leukemias and blood disorders. So we know they're safe. That means they can be fast-tracked to a degree and can be used in circumstances where a disease has no other treatment option. And so that, therefore, appears to be like a clinical trial, but it's what's known as an experimental intervention. There's a lot of those sort of stories going around, but there's no evidence that bone marrow stem cells make brain cells.
So when are we looking at a real cure for something being on the market?
Oh, that's a million-dollar question, really, isn't it? So we have 4 clinical trials in stem cell research currently being undertaken internationally. I would like to think that those are going to progress through successfully, but we need to keep in mind, and the public needs to keep in mind, that, you know, we're talking about cells that are being transplanted into the body. Once they're in, we can't take them out. So a normal drug, if you had a side effect, you'd just stop taking it. We can't take those cells back out, so we need to make sure they're really safe. And in order to do that, these clinical trials might take a while because we need to see long-term how these patients go. So while the clinical trials have been started, it may be a while, until several years, until we start to see how safe they are and then how successful they are. But I'm hoping in the next 10 years or so we'll start to see some really exciting things coming out.
And Kathy, you're more on the prevention than cure side, particularly prevention of strokes.
Yeah, less on the prevention of stroke. There's a lot of work being done to educate people about how to lower their risk, and there's fantastic drugs being developed to help control the bad things like high cholesterol and high blood pressure. Unfortunately, people keep having strokes, and so my research is really oriented towards helping the brain recover from that stroke by promoting what's called neural plasticity. And that's the ability for the brain to change and adapt.
Which I was going to bring up, actually. There's a study out of the US earlier this week, from preliminary results from the CDC, about that life expectancy for a child born this year is looking to be the highest it's ever been. But it does come with a caveat, of course, which means more people may be surviving incidences of stroke, but does that necessarily equate to quality of life in those later years?
Well, you've hit on an excellent point. We've become, I think, much better in the medical world at knowing when somebody's had a stroke and treating them acutely very well, so to make sure they survive the stroke. That means that there are lots more people surviving with disabilities and impairments for the rest of their lives. And because stroke can affect people at any age, literally, that might mean 20, 30, 40 years of life ahead of you with significant impairment and disabilities. So what I'm working on more is about figuring out ways to help the brain adapt to that and form new connections or strengthen existing ones to recover the functions that have been lost. And that really is about boosting the brain's response to therapy, for example, physiotherapy. So we're developing a range of techniques to activate the stroke side of the brain. We call that priming, so that it's then more responsive to the therapy it receives and hopefully makes those connections more easily for a better recovery.
Well, we unfortunately we've run out of time,
yes.
And we haven't even got onto the really fun, you know, brain stuff. But, maybe next time. Thank you, Bronwyn and Kathy. Just briefly, where can people go to find out more about the kind of things that happen during Brain Week?
Probably the Centre for Brain Research's website at the University of Auckland, and also the Neurological Foundation's website, because they've been coordinating Brain Week events throughout the country.
Kathy Stanier and Bronwyn Connor there, and those websites. The Neurological Foundation is neurological.org.nz, and the Centre for Brain Research is just too long to read out on the radio, so just Google Centre for Brain Research Auckland. After the break, Kiwi Chinese director Roseanne Liang and Tikitani.